John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Download their app today and use promo code THEGAME. Joining us now is Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow. One thing that I wanted to ask Hutton as we're getting him onto the Zoom, who he thought was the best quarterback on Saturday. Something I asked Trevor. I know Tim talked about that with you guys yesterday, Tim Hasselbeck. I want to hear Hutton's perspective here, if it's any different than either ours or our experts' opinions that we talked to yesterday.
Yeah, I would love to see. I'd love to hear what Hutt has to say. I listened to the segment with Trevor Maddich and what he had said. And you guys, you and Adam replayed it, I believe. So, you know, everybody's going to have their various opinions on who did well, who didn't, or who should play this game. Me, frankly, I think both guys were okay. They weren't great. They were not horrible either. So
both did good things, both did bad things.
Exactly. Got things to build on. You know, so that's the way I look at it.
I think in a couple of days we're going to have a lot more to talk about. I think, as is naturally the case every year, we're just starved for stuff to talk about in a game. And so we're probably taking too much out of this. We've certainly scrutinized basically every play that these guys ran the first game. So the new chapter will be good. Because really, ultimately, the most important thing, I know, for example, we talked a lot about the last drive for each guy, two-minute drill, for Malik Willis late, where they get inside the 10, can't punch it in. And then Levis gets sort of the surprise chance at 39 seconds left and gets him down there. He's got a chance. Neither of them were able to get him in there for that last touchdown. But the important thing is now you can take that. That's a teaching moment, and the good players learn from that. So it might have been the best thing to not have won that game. Maybe it's best that they didn't score. So now you take that, and the next time they're in that situation, will they be better because of that? That's how you have to look at it. That's what a coach will look at.
Do we have Hutton?
Yeah. I think we have. Do we have Hutt?
Not. We don't have Hutton quite yet, but I do want to hear who we thought was the best quarterback yesterday. And that was something that I talked about with Trevor Maddich when I was filling in for Jared yesterday. Was he said that he thought that Malik Willis was the better quarterback because he took things that were in front of him, causing the layups. I think that was something that Tim Hasselbeck also mentioned yesterday was, hey, when the defense gives you an opportunity, you got to take those layups. And I completely understand that perspective. But I also have to look at the other side of things. As we said, they both did good things, and I think they did, especially in comparison to their growth and what we've seen at practice. We can see that both quarterbacks have kept the things that they've needed to work on in the back of their minds. Like, I could tell the gears were grinding for Malik Willis to not just jet off when the first opportunity presented itself to use his legs. But also on the other side of things is, you know, who did the worst things worse? But Jonathan Hutton is with us now. Hutton, who was the better quarterback on Saturday?
Oh, what a it's to be determined. Look, by the way, it's good to have the trio back together. Well, Willie?
Yeah.
Good to see you. D-Mace, Caroline. Willis was the better quarterback. I thought Malik Willis played better, but the caveat to that is he also made more mistakes than Will Levis. So I think it's an incomplete. I think it's closer than just the obvious Malik Willis is the backup and Levis is the three. I'm not willing to say that yet because we have time. If the season started tomorrow in New Orleans, I think Malik Willis is the backup. And that's a big surprise for me, guys. You know, I stand with, if it's a tie deal, I think, you know, that you would go with Levis, but I don't think it's tied, but I also don't think it's a landslide one way or the other.
Jonathan Hutton is with us. Hutton, what do you think about the offensive line? And we saw one series of the starting offensive line. Do you feel more encouraged about the same, less encouraged about the offensive line for what we saw on Saturday?
I was hoping they would play the offensive line more. Mm-hmm. Willis and Levis were rotating. I don't know why, not rotating on the front offensive line, but I mean, these guys need reps. I understand that the coaching staff, Vrabel has a better grasp on that than I do. Five new starters in week one and potentially through week six if they stay healthy. That deserves more than one drive. What we saw was very encouraging. I thought they were efficient. I thought they had some great push, especially in the run game down close to the goal line. I'm not trying to, you know, throw in the towel on them. I do think they need more live work. And here's where I'm coming. It's not just about starting the entire group from scratch compared to last year. I think that's a good thing. It's who they're going with. And the other thing to keep in mind is the last 2 years in week one, this offense has been sluggish and behind. And that was with Arizona and New York. And I just get the same feel that everything's going to be kind of coming together over the first couple of games because that's kind of what is expected based on all the new pieces. But at the same time, I mean, I don't know why you run it back the way they have if you're not going to do everything possible to hit the ground running in week one. I think it's imperative that they do much better than what we've seen the last 2 years from the same, for the most part, the same offensive group and now a new look offensive line. They're going to get a lot of work starting today in Minneapolis. There's no doubt. But I think in just terms of reps and the consistency, I would go for another drive instead of treating them like this is some veteran line that we would have seen on this team 2 years ago.
Talk with Jonathan Hutton, host of Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow, 3 to 6 on these airwaves. Hutt, which guy or guys you think did well? We talked about this yesterday, Willie and I, and I thought some of the receivers did a really good job. Jackson, mm-hmm. Roberson. I think Tajay Spears did a really good job, but there were guys also that didn't do so well. So which guys do you think helped themselves and hurt themselves?
You know, to me, it's Spears and then the rest of the group. I don't know if you guys agree, but Tajay Spears is the big winner. And this was evident from minicamp. And this has been evident since day one of training camp. He is going to be more than just a change of pace back for this offense. He's going to be a more than just a wrinkle in the passing game. I'm intrigued to see how they roll him out with Tim Kelly. I thought, and speaking of Tim Kelly, I put him on this list. I like the way that he stacked calls. I like the way that he ran the offense from, you know, his viewpoint, and you can see kind of the rhythm of what he's trying to get into. Now, he's got young quarterbacks that are stalling that a bit. He also doesn't have the top tier wide receivers. But I did like what I saw from the debut of Kelly compared to what we've seen. And it starts with Tajay Spears and how they're making him, they're forcing the issue with him. And that is such a breath of fresh air for a rookie to come in and instead of just being spoon fed, just allowing them to go out, put them in the mix and tell them, yeah, you're a part of this group. It's time to go. And Spears has done that. I'm very impressed with what he's done so far. And I think he's more than just a third down back.
Now, do you think they should, because I think the position that I am worried about, Hutt, is the tight end position. I think besides Chika Conquan, he's only a second year guy, but I believe he has a huge upside and he showed some of it last year. But they really don't have any depth behind that position. When you're relying on a second year guy to be the head of that position, I just think you're setting yourself up for failure if he does go down. So that position,
yeah.
It really, you know, to me, it disappointed me other than Chig. and Chig didn't play, but they need some depth, some quality depth at that position.
Agreed. And Mace, you could pick a position and we could replay what you just said. Mm-hmm. And I think it would fit for practically any position on this roster. And that is due in large part to the rookie classes. I mean, that was glaring to me, is the depth on this team is nowhere close to where it needs to be. And that's where you have to, eventually you have to pay the piper. You swing and miss on Isaiah Wilson. Dylan Radins is a backup. And you have the injuries that you have, and you allocate money to guys that are no longer here. Eventually you have to build back up with those draft picks. You don't go back and draft a wide receiver in the third round. Instead, you try to get some help in the backfield, but in something that Haskins wasn't. And you also have to address the offensive line all over again. And, oh, by the way, you need help at corner because Caleb Farley is nowhere to be found. I mean, those picks come back to bite them. And we saw it a bit last year. We're already seeing it without any injuries now. And beyond the Skoronski, I thought was exactly who we would think he would be in this debut. Mm-hmm. Burks, Okonkwo, and Spears. I mean, is there a young offensive talent that is exciting in terms of, that they're going to come along and be a part of this offense by October, be a part of this offense by playoff time? Other than those guys, I can't point to anybody. And it's not just a tight end issue, but that is a huge part of what they want to do and how they're built. You're exactly right. And I mean, I think we all learned the second and third string offensive linemen currently on this team are nowhere close to being anywhere compared to Andre Dillard, who was a backup in Philly, who's now a starting left tackle for this team. So that's the other main concern, and probably plays into why they're not seeing many reps in live action, unless it's a controlled atmosphere and environment like they'll get today.
More with Hutton coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace is brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow, is with us now.
Okay, Hutton, I got a couple of numbers for you to chew on here. And you have to keep in mind that for the first time in a while, this is one of the things that Ryan Tannehill should be commended for, is he's been durable. But last year, there's about 150 plays or so that he's not in the game. But last year, I'm looking at the football almanac that Aaron Schatz puts out every year. Last year, the Titans, despite all of the limitations of offense, were second in the NFL at 8.9 yards per play on play action. But they had only 4.9 yards per play without play action. I'm looking at things that Tim Kelly, can they improve on those numbers? And how do you go about it? So how would you try to tackle that? If you're Tim Kelly, that number alone, because we know that's been the case for a long time. Their bread and butter has been effective play action passing, but a little deficient in the other one.
Great. It's a great observation, and Schatz does a nice job with those analytics. Look, let's also – this is the area where I think the great debate on Todd Downing prior to anything in December happened, because what Tim Kelly has to start the season is a far better receiving core than some of those play-action opportunities that Tannehill would have been using in those situations. So I think they went away from play-action because they couldn't protect him. They didn't want to turn the back to the defense. It was that bad. And who are they throwing to last year? I mean, it was a terrible group for the second half of that year. And, I mean, they started out with injuries as it was. Point being, Kelly, here's the thing that the balance to me in using Henry, where they were so many times, so often on the three and outs, it was very predictable what they were going to do. Not because they're a run-first team or because Henry gets the ball on first and second down. It was there on second down, it's second and 11. On third down, it's third and 13 or third and 8, where they've got to have someone step up and make a play. And, you know, no, there's no one really to go to that you're pointing to as the guy. You know, Burks and Hopkins can be that guy. They just, you know, have to stay together. The other thing too to factor in is some of these games where Malik Willis, and I know you're just looking at Tannehill, but the play action numbers too. I mean, if we're just going for the entire season, they weren't even trying to throw the football with him. So, and Tannehill's banged up too with the ankle, playing through injury would factor into some of these notes on when they did and when they didn't, and the success rate versus not using it, but probably had to a bit more based on mobility. I think all those things factor in, but I think Kelly, it just a nuanced sense here. I think he's, we have to look at it from what we saw in Houston with him in 2019, 2020. In 2021, the Titans were the worst opening series team in the NFL. They could not score early. And last year they fixed that and they were as good as any team early in games. And then, you know, the levee broke, the wheels fell off. And I thought, you know, from the fix now is, can they just maintain consistency? Can they go from 18 points to 22 points per game? That puts them in a different stratosphere, and that also puts them with a win, a notch in the win column that they would have needed last year to make the playoffs. Tannehill's at his best on play action. You know, he's best throwing across the middle of the field. We saw that in 2020 with the dynamic group that they had offensively. But all of that played off of a 2,000-yard season for Henry. And when Henry's running for 1,500 yards, but the winds aren't there, that's not just a Tannehill or a play call issue. That can be up front on the line. It can be who they're throwing to and who's able to make the plays. And if they're even able to catch the ball and get to the sticks, you know, like stay on the field also helps this. There were a lot of three and outs a year ago.
You brought up something I was going to bring up, and that is how the analytics people interpret something like what happened to the Titans last year. They got off to some very good starts, and one of the big criticisms of Downing was after the first 20-25 plays, then he's running out of wrinkles. Now, and obviously the production dropped off in the second half. They were one of the worst second half offensive teams, if not the worst, especially in the fourth quarter. You have to go back and look, but we know the deal, right? They started off reasonably well, and there was a drop off. A lot of people in analytics, they don't think that year in and year out, it's always a product of the coordinator, just as a random thing sometimes. I'll give you an example on hockey. Sometimes a team is really good in the second period, but not as much in the first period. And you're like, why does that happen? The coach doesn't have the answer half the time, most of the time. You try to come up with theories, but there's really no reason. And sometimes the statisticians say, look, it's random. It's just how things are falling over the course of the game. But do you buy that, Jonathan? Do you think that it will be different with a different coordinator, the first half, second half performance? Because that's obviously something we're going to be looking for.
Well, the big change, they were bad in 2021 in the first half again. And then the change.
Yeah, and
last
it flipped, like you
Kelly
said. So was that random, or was there a reason for that?
I mean, I believe in layering calls and staying ahead of the defensive coordinator. That's on the coordinator. That certain calls that he would mix in were just kind of mind-numbing on how they would do it. They'd be in a drive. They'd actually have a nice drive in the second quarter, and he would insert something that would just stall the drive. By the way, the Titans averaged 2.2 points per game in the fourth quarter a year ago. That is dead last.
Not good.
Chicago,
not good.
Oh, my God. That's worse than I even thought.
Yeah, it's pathetic. Now, keep in mind, in 2021, like we're flipping this, they didn't start games well. They finished games well. They averaged nearly 7 points in the fourth quarter in 2021. So, like, they've got to maintain. They were not able to do that. And the defense is what allowed them to even be in games for the first half of the year when, you know, they had no business going to Kansas City with Malik Willis as the starter and being in a final possession of that. It's a mix, Willie. The coordinator absolutely plays a factor in it, because that's the rhythm. That's the heartbeat of what you're trying to accomplish in the game plan. But there were times last year, and look, I'm not a Downing guy. I'm glad that Tim Kelly is in this position. There were times where it did not matter what their focus was, and their focus is Henry, because they were stalling out, and when they had to pass, Tannehill was getting lit up. It was that bad. They were they were consistently inconsistent and very predictable, not just on down and distance, but on when they would be good and when they wouldn't be good. And there was no adjustment from that. That was a theme all through the year. And they never got their head around exactly what was going on. And by the end of the year, they had no one that was going to help the cause in terms of depth or roster spots because they were on guy 90 instead of guy 53.
Yes. So we do have to factor that in. All right. One more on the offensive line. And this is another question of how will it look with Tim Kelly? We know there are still major questions with the offensive line. Part of the reason for this is because of shaky offensive line play. But last year, and I think you could look back the year before and the year before, and it would be similar. The Titans used two tight ends more than almost anybody. Fourth most in the league last year. And I don't, like I said, I don't think that differs from the year before that. And, you know, people would talk about Swaim and why is Swaim in the game, all this. They use the second tight end a lot, almost like an extra offensive lineman. 42% of their snaps had two tight ends in there last year. Is that going to be significantly different this year? Or do you think Tim Kelly is going to have to say, look, I got a shaky offensive line here. I need extra help, big guys up front.
I think they have to go bigger. You know, they've got different tight ends, versatile tight ends or options, I should say, on this roster. Guys they can motion into the backfield to be the H, and guys they can motion from that position up to help at right tackle or left tackle. But the way the offense is built and the drop-off of the top two receivers and then the rest of the group, I think they are far better served to have an extra tight end as even a passing option just to, you know, gain some positive yardage if the levee breaks and Tannehill's got to get the ball out quick. I also think Tajay Spears can play a factor in that too. And, you know, they've had that wrinkle. I think he's going to be more than that. And he could even be a three down back if they want to give him a full series. I think they're that confident in him. So but they have pieces that they haven't had last year, the year prior, but the two tight and the best success we saw with Tannehill was with Arthur Smith and the two tight end concept. And they still put up 1,000-yard receiver. They should have had two, but Corey Davis missed two or three games with a hammy, and they had a 2,000-yard rusher with that too. And you know, you had the tight ends combined for like 700 yards that year. So that's where they're at their best, and that also factors into play action with the two tight because you can do more things off of that. And I think that's more what Kelly is about, and that's also why when Arthur Smith left Willie. And took the head coaching job in Atlanta, one of the first guys that Vrabel tried to get in touch with and asked permission to talk with was Tim Kelly in Houston, and that was denied. And as soon as the coaching staff broke up there, well, guess who's here? Tim Kelly. That it will be more of what we saw with Arthur Smith compared to Downing, who ran a lot of 11 personnel in Oakland. And so he did what he was brought in to do and hired to do. He ran his offense as the coordinator. And that was vastly different than what we saw the year prior.
Now, quickly before we get you out of here, can you see this team making some type of move, a trade, if this offensive line and the depth, because it, as we speak now, it doesn't seem like they have much depth at all. But can you see this team making a move via a trade before the season starts?
It would have to be
even if they got anything to trade, you know?
Yeah, well, draft picks and stuff, right? Yeah. But, like, that's, again, like, offensive line trades are so rare because the second-tier offensive lineman in the NFL is a massive drop-off. It's like starting quarterback. Nowadays, the best athletes on the field, if you're big, you're playing defensive line. You're rushing the passer. You're not blocking. It's tough to find the athletic lineman. And it's glaring. I don't know if you guys agree, but there is a steep drop-off in overall ability, athletic ability, from first string to second string. And if you've got a luxury of having, you know, the Dennis Kelly, who can be a six man more or less, I don't think you trade that guy if you're in a good spot. You're in a luxury position, and you're probably the general manager of a pretty good football team. So I don't get rid of those guys, because if you trade one of them and then you have an injury, the guy that you should have there is going to be far better than the guy that you currently would have in-house. So I think you're more likely to try to, again, hit the waiver wire, find out about all these cuts. But that's not good either, because if they're on the waiver wire, they're not starters. They're not that guy that we're talking about trading for. It's a difficult spot. I would also say the same thing, like the more light, not for a trade, but how worried are you guys about kicker? Because I am.
I'm worried.
Here we go again there. This team is built to be close in the fourth quarter. And, I mean, if you need a 44-yard field goal for the tie or the win, I mean, I'm not confident in it. And that's going to be a weekly issue. It's not it's a weekly confidence issue. And it could be the difference in the division. It really could. I'm really concerned about it. And I'm talking about a bad division, and how I view it currently. It's an average division, and it's top heavy with Jacksonville and Tennessee compared to the others. Houston could play a factor, but the kicker is going to definitely play a factor for Tennessee.
I'm worried about kicker. I'm sick of worrying about the kicker, Hutt.
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of kicker, like two or three kickers on rosters right now. So there's going to be an open tryout in late August at the practice facility of the Tennessee Titans. Let's put it that way.
Maybe I'll go.
I don't think they go into the season very confident based on the fact that, I mean, Shudak's got to be the guy. And, you know, it's not like they're creating a competition for him. He's in a competition. You know, some of these kickers, they
would
try to
create a competition.
That's not the case here.
Mm-hmm. Hutt, appreciate you. Enjoy the week. Enjoy the game on Saturday night. We'll chat soon.
Yep. You guys always do a great job. Always enjoy this. Have a great week.
Awesome. Thanks, Hutt. You too. Coming up next, there is something that is becoming more difficult to ignore in this town, and we will explain coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106 for the game.
Nothing changes. You know, nobody ever gives us a chance. And I think that's part of maybe the internal drive of the group. We always seem to be, you know, the ugly sister, as it were. As far as the goal's concerned, I actually haven't seen it again. But what I would say is this. The actual build-up to it and then the finish was so incredibly good. I would have to assume that for whatever reason the goal was disallowed. It was a major reason, a very important reason. Have any of the guys in here and ladies seen it? If you have, you probably have a better idea than I. But I would seriously question why that goal is scratched off.
I could listen to Gary Smith talk all day long. I love it. I love his voice. That was the head coach of Nashville SC, Gary Smith. Now, if you've listened to this program, you may know how I feel about Nashville SC. I think that it is an elitist club that puts itself on a pedestal. And I compare it to the Nashville Predators, for example. When the Nashville Predators came to town, they did everything in their power to educate the city on the game, to make it accessible, to break down any barriers between a non-hockey town at the time and the game of hockey. And now you can't tell the story of the city of Nashville without the Nashville Predators. Nashville SC, on the other hand, I don't feel that has come even close to what the Nashville Predators did, for example, of being a new team in town, maybe a sport that's not as popular as, say, football. You bring an NFL team in town, you don't really need to reach out to get fans. It's football. Soccer, hockey, those sports are different. You're going to have to break down those barriers a little bit. So it's a club that I've had some frustrations with. It's a league that I've had frustrations with, that you're going to play all your games on Apple TV Plus. You're going to put your games in a sport that's not as popular as baseball or football or even hockey. You're going to put it behind a paywall on a streaming service that's really not that popular. Like, it's not like an Amazon where everyone has an Amazon. Like, I don't have an Apple TV Plus. Do you have an Apple TV Plus?
I do.
I do for Ted Lasso.
Okay.
But I don't have the plus. So it's a paywall with an extra paywall is what it is. You
is
pay
it?
For Apple TV. Well, you got to pay for Apple TV.
Mm. Oh.
You subscribe to Apple TV. And then you pay for Apple TV Plus to get the soccer games, which I don't do.
There's not enough money to go around here.
Well, there's we've had this discussion about all the different platforms now where the games are. It is a really fascinating story how they've gone about it because they've done a lot right. Nashville SC's done a lot right. But now you're all what you're leading to, Caroline, is
the fact that
what's going to happen on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The perfect storm has happened, and now you have one of the greatest soccer stars of all time, worldwide, mm-hmm. is playing in our city on Saturday. So what do you do? Like that to yeah. their to the soccer diehards, it's already on. Like look at the ticket prices on the secondary market for these tickets.
I'm looking at Saturday ticket night. Prices right now on Ticketmaster, and it says verified resale tickets. $2,200 in section 103.
A friend of mine texted me, said I went to the game last week, got these seats in pretty solid seats mm-hmm. for $87 a couple weeks ago for the game on Saturday against Miami, Messi's team, $1,400.
And that's on the secondary market?
This is on ticketsonsale.com, which okay. I've never heard of before. So
I believe that's
market.
A secondary market.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of layers to this because for a season ticket holder of the Nashville SC, you have access to these games, but there were different levels because what's happening, Lionel Messi and his team, which are, it's confusing because they're in the MLS, but this is a non-MLS league tournament that's going on, right? There's a lot of teams in there.
It's constructed by the MLS committee, I do believe, but they do include the Liga MX, the Mexican leagues,
yeah.
and then some Canadian clubs as well.
Right, and Nashville SC has gone on a great run. Last night they upset, put this in perspective, Nick, probably yeah. the best team they've ever beaten last
yeah.
night.
Yeah, I mean, this whole run they've had against Club America, Monterrey, those are two of the most historic clubs in Mexican soccer. So with those two upsets, it does put it into perspective that that was probably the biggest upset in club history.
So winning these games, they now have the opportunity to play against the Miami team that Messi has been playing for.
Correct.
And they've won on their end. So it's really... We didn't expect this going into this year, that you would have this opportunity, right?
Right. Now, you know, a couple weeks ago, I was on Junie and Nick Kieser's show on the weekend, Riddle and the Reporter, and I, you know, have my own little Nashville SC segment at the end. They were like, so what's the deal with Nashville SC? They're on their downslope at the time. I was like, listen, this tournament, this is going to turn them around. I do believe this is going to be their upswing. And sure enough, they're at this upswing facing Lionel Messi in the final in Nashville. So, like, going up against the greatest player on the planet, easily, hands down, this is a huge opportunity. I've said it like beating it like a broken drum, but it's a huge opportunity for the city and the club.
So, biggest soccer game that's ever been played in Nashville, even though we've had some pretty high-level Olympic qualifiers, World Cup qualifiers for the women.
This beats it.
I think it'll end up being bigger, but because of the venue, it won't get the largest crowd because they sold
sure.
out Nissan. With
59,000.
Yeah. They sold out Nissan years ago. Was it last year or 2 years ago?
It was back in 2020. It was a yeah. home opener against
yes,
Atlanta United.
Exactly. Yeah. So
it's going to be huge.
It's going to be packed, but they won't reach the numbers that they would have reached. That's one of those situations where you almost think, shouldn't you play it at Nissan Stadium?
Well,
now that would create a lot of issues for the season ticket holder because
it would.
Yeah, but I'm just saying because you can get
I agree,
more
though.
People. Yeah.
Yeah,
and it's gonna be huge.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Messi. It's one of the biggest stars, not just in sports, but just in the world. Period. But the point that Willie was bringing up was, if you're a season ticket mm-hmm. holder, the going rate for a game on average is probably what, $60.
So I have a ticket breakdown if you guys want the
yeah,
ticket breakdown.
But the tickets, the ticket prices for this game against Miami are, I mean, 10, 15 times what they are for a normal game. So is that fair? Like, is that fair to be price gouging your season ticket holders?
Of course, it's not fair, but it happens.
Well, the question comes down to, I don't know whose decision it is. Is it Nashville SC's decision, or is this MLS telling them what to charge? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, Nick, as I understand it, if you bought the full season ticket package, which includes all home games that are played in that stadium, then you play, you pay your regular price. You hit the jackpot
yep.
for this. But if you only purchase the league games, you have access to these, to this game on Saturday, which you should, but you're paying the gouge price.
$386 per seat. And that's in the 200s. So the ticket.
And there are no bad seats in this stadium. I will say this. If you're upper deck at that stadium, it's still a great place to watch.
When I cover the team, I love to do a walk around the stadium. And I went to the highest part of the stadium and I took a giant snapshot. It is probably the, I guess, kind of like the Preds. Anywhere in Bridgestone is a great seat. Same here with Nashville SC. Anywhere you sit is a phenomenal seat. But here's the ticket breakdown. I'll make it very brief. Behind the goal, not in the supporters section. This is throughout the League's Cup minus the Inter-Miami game. $51 to $55. Sideline seats opposite of the bench, $102 to $115.
This is just for like a regular game.
This is during the League's Cup and regular game, kind of in that realm.
Okay, so non-messy game.
Non-messy. 200 level, $33 to $45. Supporter section, $24. Not preferred if you're trying to watch it with your family just because everyone's standing. And then during the messy extravaganza, the cheapest ticket for general standing room is around $640. So that's $640.
Okay, so they limit it to six.
Yes.
Per person.
Correct.
It's hard to sort of understand it because even now I'm looking on Ticketmaster, and even before it's been open to the public, half of these seats are already sold, and they're selling now on resale for $5,000, $6,000. So if you're only limiting people or your, you know, season ticket holders to six tickets, are you doing that across the board? Because it doesn't seem like you are.
But there's only so much that they can control. Like, I don't have a problem with them limiting tickets because I think that eliminates the possibility of some person buying up a bunch of tickets and then selling them on the resale market.
Well, they're going to do it anyway.
But up to six. Because they could buy 30 of these tickets and then resell them at an absolutely astronomical price. But honestly, D-May is like, I'm with you. I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's when in Rome, you have the biggest star in the game, the biggest star in a long time coming into your city. I don't have a problem with it.
Well, I mean,
capitalize on it.
Basketball does it all the time. Football is hard to do. You rarely do it unless it's a Super Bowl where the prices are up. But basketball,
even, like, if you were to go to a Titans game, I mean, when Joe Burrow and the Bengals are in town, tickets are much more expensive than when.
But you're not going to be paying. You're not going to be paying $1,000 for a ticket. You you're just not. You're probably not even pay over $400 for a ticket at a football game, but. When you're talking basketball, when LeBron James comes into town, especially this upcoming season where people don't know if he's going to retire or not, let him say he's going to retire and watch those tickets go from, I don't know, $200 to $2,000, no matter where you're at. So I guess what I'm saying is there are sports that can do it, basketball, soccer. There are sports that can't do it. Football probably is the one that it's hard to do it unless it's the Super Bowl.
Even
baseball, do they do it in baseball?
No. Change the price based on the game? No, I don't think so.
So baseball and football are they're more consistent.
Postseason is different, obviously, than the regular
season.
And
but
resale is something that's kind of out of their control. Like, let's say
that's the market determines,
if Aaron
really.
Judge or Shohei Ohtani are in town, the ticket prices on the resale market are going to be much higher than when A's are in town.
My buddy just texted me. I'm not sure what site this is, but he said a front row ticket to this Saturday night's game is $23,000.
Okay, well, so let's.
I don't know. Messy. I don't know where he got that from. I'll have to try to find it, confirm the source, but that is ridiculous.
Even if he just made that up, I believe it.
I want to know if anybody's going to this game. I would love to hear from our listeners on the call or text line 615-737-1025. Are you going? And what we need to hit on the other side is, are you going to watch? This game goes up against the Titans game on Saturday night. So are you flipping back and forth? We've talked about the fact that the games are really generally not televised unless you pay the Apple Plus. But I believe, Nick, you told us that you can watch this game, right? This game
is
on?
I do believe so. I know last night that Apple TV did a semifinal, like, watch-free of the League's Cup. I'm not sure if it's going to be for the final. I'm assuming it should be. And then I think Fox might also carry this as well. So I'm going to confirm those during the break, and we'll get you an answer.
We'll get to your thoughts on this coming up next, but the question is what Willie just posed. Messi in Nashville, League's Cup, or Titans preseason game? What are you going to be watching? We'll get into that.
And how do you maximize this opportunity if you're Nashville SC to try to get more in the mainstream? To me, this is a huge chance to do that.
Huge opportunity.
Like you said, I do think there's a detachment. It's like, hey, if you love soccer, we're here, and they're getting theirs. They're getting great crowds. They're doing, but do you want to go for the big home run, which to me encompasses the whole city? You feel like even non-soccer fans are more drawn to that stadium. I think that's the next level for them. And this is a great chance for them to make inroads there.
Great opportunity for Nashville SC. We'll get into your thoughts on the other side. 615-737-1025. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 1025-1063 The Game. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace. Hey, we are your racing station. 1025 and 1063 The Game is Nashville's home for NASCAR. Tune in this Sunday for the Go Bowling at the Glen at 3 p.m. NASCAR on 1025, 1063, The Game is presented by O'Charley's. So the question of the day. So Nashville SC is hosting Lionel Messi in the League Cup on Saturday. The biggest star in the game. One of the biggest star in sports worldwide. Messi in Nashville. I saw someone tweet out, it's pretty wild that Messi's going to be playing across the street from Santa's Pub. You know, life comes at you fast. You're watching that game or the Titans preseason game. Now, Raymond in Franklin texts in. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Says you're comparing it to a preseason Titans game. LOL, if you're a soccer fan, you're not watching those third and fourth stringers play. Well, duh. If you're a soccer fan, you're going to be watching this game, whether you're in Nashville or Miami or wherever you are. But the question isn't towards soccer fans. The question is just toward our listeners here. Because I think that's kind of the interesting thing, the fact that we're even bringing up the question. Are you watching one of the biggest stars of the game, if not the biggest star of the game, or a Titans preseason game? The fact that we even have to ask the question is really the crux of the conversation.
I think it's a fascinating question. And I remember a couple years ago, we had a guy on. It was a year or two before Nashville SC was going to take the field. We had a guy on from Atlanta. And Atlanta United was becoming a big thing. Remember a few years ago, they were playing in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Mm-hmm. They were getting huge crowds. They won the MLS title, and now they're a good rival for Nashville. So we're saying, well, what's that like? And he made a point, which I didn't even think about. He said, you'd be surprised how little crossover there is between a crowd that goes to a Falcons game and a crowd that goes to an Atlanta United game. So I think that's the mark of a big sports city, is you have – two separate crowds. You're not relying. You're not saying, oh, man, we can't have this game Saturday night because the Titans are playing. Like, once upon a time, we used to talk about that all the time. Man, the Predators are playing and Vanderbilt basketball is playing in Kentucky. Maybe they should move their game. You know, they would talk about the Predators like that. And the Predators were like, wait a minute. We've got to put our own roots down. We've got to develop our fan base. We can't worry about – the city's got to be big enough to handle two or three big sporting events on the same day. So that's what's happening here. But this is the first time we've had something like this. So I agree. We're going to have five people say, I wouldn't watch a soccer game over a football game ever.
And there's probably going to be plenty of people plenty that of those say, people. Why would I watch a preseason
right.
game?
It sounds just as crazy to them the other way than it does to Raymond say, why would I watch a preseason football game when Messi's in town in a big soccer game in our city?
Right.
But I'm just curious how it falls. But I do think they're building their own audience. Mm-hmm. But I would like to see in soccer it become more of something that all of us look forward to.
Right.
And not just the soccer fans.
Cool angle. Sorry, D-Man.
No, go ahead.
Cool angle going into this finals. Tata Martino, who is the manager of Inter Miami, was the manager of Atlanta United when Nashville SC played them the first time. So Tata Martino also was the coach for FC Barcelona when Lionel Messi and Jordi Alba and Sergio Busquets were all playing in Spain.
Well, if you look at – I think they're still going to be – if you're a Titan fan, you're going to watch the game. You're going to watch the Titan game. I think it comes on. Does it come on at 8 o'clock?
At 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock Central. So you're still going to watch the Titans game. And there's going to be some that flip over, kind of go back and forth. Because once the starters are out, I can go back and just watch all of, you know, the soccer game. And I don't necessarily have to be a huge soccer fan. It's just – Lionel Messi is playing in my city, so I'm going to watch it. Now, will it take away from Titan fans? I don't think so. I think there's this facet of, you know, soccer fans or SC fans, and then there are Titan fans. There are some that, you know, sort of cross over to both. But I think, like Willie said, I think they have their own group of hardcore fans, just like the Titans have their own group of hardcore fans.
Wes in Clarksville, Texas says, Titans should open Nissan Stadium for a watch party in Nashville SC. Make it happen, Caroline. I don't have this power. I cannot do this.
Well, can you imagine having one end of the Jumbotron, you can look one way and the soccer game's on, and you turn around, you know, you have a little swivel chair, and you flip around
the game.
And so you have Titans on one end, Nashville SC on the other. That'd be a pretty creative idea.
Is there a concert going on this weekend at Nissan? That's what we need to find out first.
Because
it seems like there's a concert every week there.
But if I'm Nashville SC, I'm doing everything in my power to get that game on as many televisions in the city of Nashville as possible.
That's a great point. And I think I would be doing exactly the same thing. Make sure every sports bar has got that game on along with the Titans game. Because to me, as a sports fan, that's my mentality is, can I watch both games? I'll flip back and forth. You know, some people will record one game and watch the other, whatever. I like to sort of be in the moment, right? I'd love to be watching both games. And of course, is the game on channel, the Titans game on channel 2, or we got the same problem with DirecTV
again? Yeah, I
think
it's going to be the same problem.
So D-Max and I are going to be leaving our house to watch
that game
anyway.
I got to watch Titans online.
Yeah. Fingers crossed there's no bad weather. But that's my thing with Nashville SC is it's not every day when you are in this league, in the MLS, that the biggest star in the sport globally is on your home turf. So what are you going to do to take advantage of that opportunity of having Messi in your stadium? But the text line is absolutely blown up on this.
I got one minute left. Oh, no, I got 30 seconds left to see if I can get in the queue. Well, I'm in
Oh, you're going to try to get in the queue?
You got it, D-Mace.
Yes.
D-Mace is I got
10 seconds left.
Fan.
It's there. It's like 1 minute left. Well, less
Three,
than 1 minute.
Lifelong soccer fan.
Now it's gonna push him over to the queue, hopefully.
All right, well, let's see if you get your tickets. Because let's get your text on this coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.